We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Spinning is Sabonis.
Oh, Miles Turner bringing that smoke.
And now McDermott again, right to the rim with authority.
Brogdon gets around.
Plumford skies high for the jam.
Warren lets it fly.
Yes! T.J. Warren is not human.
Pacer Nation, what's going on? Welcome back to another episode of Setting the Pace, and we are finally back at it after rescheduling this podcast about three or four times. We've got Mark in the studio, Schindler, and Rhett on the road, Bauer, joining us today. Guys, how are we doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Alex. How are you doing, man?
I'm glad to be back talking Pacers basketball. It's this week off has been different, but I mean, it's been good, but I'm ready to watch some Pacers basketball. But Rhett, how's it going over there, man?
Oh, not too bad. Just multitasking. So, hopes.
well, there we go. So, just want to jump into it because it was breaking news last night that Ryan Saunders from the Minnesota Timberwolves was let go of his job. And I know this is not Pacers related, but it just kind of brought back that memory of going through the coaching search in the offseason. And a name that was very popular here, Finch, was the name that a lot of Pacers fans were excited about possibly being the coach here. It was mentioned as maybe a front runner. He joined Toronto staff, and now he's taking over Minnesota in the middle of the season. Talk to me about this. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. So I was mentioning this to you guys before we got on. I was just totally taken aback. I was watching the Sixers Raptors game when the news broke yesterday. And I mean, my first thought was, okay, cool. I mean, Chris Finch is a really good hire. I expected him to be a head coach last summer or maybe in this coming year. But then immediately I was like, this is weird. Like, I knew Ryan Saunders because I've talked to a lot of people with Minnesota recently. The Pacers just played them. So I'd been in touch with some people, and I just did a longer project on the Timberwolves freelance. Hearing this was like, it's not surprising that Ryan Saunders got fired per se, but the timing was so weird. You know, like I think it came very out of nowhere, and talking to some people again today, like very out of nowhere. And also too, it was just shady. I thought, yeah. I get that, you know, Chris Finch had worked previously with Gerson Rosas, the current GM of the Timberwolves when they were both in the G League, and Chris Finch had been an assistant in Houston when Rosas was working under Daryl Morey there. But it's a very weird look for an organization to hire somebody full time just after firing somebody in the middle of the season. Normally it goes to an interim, and like you look at David Vanterpool is somebody who has been interviewed to be a head coach. He was largely brought to Minnesota to become a head coach. I think there have been talks about him, you know, either moving on from there this season or you know, even as far as if Ryan got fired, that David Vanterpool would be the head coach kind of been waiting there. I'm not sure that he's even going to be on the staff, frankly. It's wow. Probably a slap in the face to him. I mean, think about it. Like, they could bring in an entirely new coaching staff. Like, how weird would that be to bring in a head coach who has not, I mean, maybe he's worked with some of the guys on the staff. I'd have to look, but you go from an entire, it's like a regime change in government, you know, like you bring in an entirely new person. They're going to want to bring in their own people.
Right. Right.
So it's just a really weird, sticky situation. I get that they wanted to hire their guy, but it's a kind of a slight to David Vanterpool. Definitely a slight to Ryan Saunders. I get why you fire him, but maybe wait till the All-Star break when it's a little bit more sensible. But mainly it was weird. I think that's the only real thing I have on it.
Yeah, and I have a couple things I want to get into there, but real quick, I want to get your thoughts on this, Rhett. What were your reactions when you saw this news break?
Yeah, the timing of it just really seems like, I mean, it's just another loss to the Timberwolves. Like, it wasn't like they were expected to win a bunch of games, and like this one loss was just so overwhelming that they had to get rid of it right that second. I completely agree that doing it during the All-Star break would have made a little bit more sense, but I also kind of agree with the train of thought that if you know that he's not the coach of your future, like, just get him out as soon as possible and get your guy in as soon as possible, just so he has those extra reps. But I don't think doing that at the expense, like hiring him within 8 minutes, like, they definitely had their new girlfriend lined up when they dumped their old girlfriend.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like, there's no question that they knew exactly what they were going to do. And I think you're absolutely right, Mark, in that David Vanterpool, even if Finch wants to keep him, I don't think he would stay. I don't think he would stay with the Timberwolves organization at all, because you're right in that he was brought in on that staff for a reason and been talked about as a head coach. And then to be on the staff, on the bench with the organization, familiar with the team, like all that stuff, and then to get not even really considered with the hiring process that was that fast in the middle of the season. It just, I can't imagine how frustrating that would be for him. But also, when it comes to Ryan Saunders as the coach, if I'm not mistaken, there were some like rumblings of nepotism when he got hired in the first place. Like, it didn't seem like there was a great coaching search that went on when I think Tibbs was fired and Saunders was named an interim and then full time. So it's not really surprising that it didn't work out, but it just seems like a struggling franchise continues to struggle, and they just kind of ripped the Band-Aid off with Saunders at a pretty, I don't want to say inappropriate, but very weird time.
Yeah, and I think, not to cut anybody off, but I think I would also say too, like you're saying about the nepotism, I would agree. Like, there, I mean, that's been pretty blatantly clear. I feel like he would not have this job if he's not Flip Saunders' son, and what Flip Saunders means to that Minnesota team. That's, from everything I know, Ryan Saunders is awesome worker, awesome dude. He knows his basketball, but he was not ready to be head coach. And it has shown through. But I think at the same time too, like, it's still just the timing is awful. Curing your original mistake by making another mistake. And I granted, Gerson Rosas did not hire Ryan Saunders, but you know, you can't cure one mistake by making another mistake. That's also pretty tangible. So I don't know, that's all I really have on that. But it was
regardless, the optics of it,
the optics that's awful. The optics,
yeah,
so
it's like
awful.
If you're, it's one thing for like the Rockets, for instance, to guarantee Boogie's deal and then try to move him somewhere else if they try to go younger. Like, that is something that kind of rehabilitates your image a little bit, but doing something like this is just, I mean, It just doesn't look good. I don't think a lot of Minnesota fans are super happy with the way it went down. I think they should be excited about Chris Finch as a head coach because of the experience he's had in Denver and New Orleans and up in Toronto a little bit. Caitlin wrote a great piece about that while he was being considered for the Pacers. But it's just the Timberwolves, man. Like, I don't know. Maybe this is the first wrong step to getting it right.
Well, and let me ask you this, because this is probably, I haven't turned on the TV at all, and I don't have any idea what anybody's talking about, but do you think this move was made because Karl Anthony Towns, that they feel the pressure of maybe losing him eventually?
I mean, I'm sure that played a factor into it. I know Karl Anthony Towns and Ryan Saunders had a really good relationship, though. I actually would argue that, and just from what I've heard too, I mean, part of the reason Ryan Saunders is still coach or was still coach this far into the season is because of the relationship he had with Cat.
Oh, wow.
But I also think if you really look at it, like, there's no way that this didn't go through Cat. They're not going to make that decision without confronting him. And like Rhett said, I mean, it was signed, sealed, and delivered before they made that that decision at all, you know? So he definitely was part of the decision-making process. That's not to talk down on him at all. But I'm just saying, like, that's he definitely was part of it. So, of course, it factors in. And actually, in his presser last night, in the press conference before Ryan Saunders even got fired, Kat talked about how important winning is to his legacy and wanting to win in Minnesota. So I think that it's a little cryptic.
Yeah.
So not to say anything on him, but I think it's there are a lot of things that point to showing that this organization was ready to make a move before it tipped its hand. So
yeah. And so I guess my last question, which is trying to kind of bring it back to the Pacers discussion, and we know with Bill Baino leaving, there is a vacancy on the assistant coaching staff. Do you think David Vanderpool would be a guy that should be considered? I mean, I'm not sure if he'd want it, but if he's not going to possibly stay there with Finch, is that a name that would be interesting to you at all, Mark?
I mean, I guess it's hard to say because, I mean, he's not. As far as we know, he's still going to be on Minnesota's staff, so I don't want to like speak that into existence.
Right.
I hope that he gets to keep his job and things work through, but I also, whatever makes him happiest, what I would want to. But I mean, I don't know if you guys saw this. Dame Lillard was pissed on the timeline yesterday.
Oh, yeah,
yep,
rightfully so, in my opinion. But that brings up a great point. Like, David Vanderpool is like one of the most respected coaches in the league by players, did a lot of great stuff, in Portland, obviously, and has in Minnesota as well. It's hard. I don't have a great feel for his X's and O's because he's not really been in. I mean, Minnesota's defense has been not good, but it's hard to blame him considering the talent there. And he's technically the defensive coordinator. But ultimately, I mean, he's great at forging relationships with players that fits in line with what Nate Bjorkman does and what the roster really wanted in moving on to a new coach. So, yeah, I think he would make sense.
Yeah. Rhett, what about you? Any thoughts on that?
I would say probably no, because of his, like, he's in line for a head coaching job, right? Like, that seems to be the next step for him. And so while it would be great to have him on the staff and build the relationships with the players and all of that, and maybe he would be a good extra mind for defense and all of that, it just seems like he's destined to get a head coaching job at some point. And so at that point, it would be bringing him in for however long, and then he ends up leaving versus somebody who may be around a little bit longer than that. But, I mean, good coaching is never a bad thing. So if that's what it takes and he wants to leave there and come here and help out, then we'd be more than happy to have him.
Yeah, and so I want to get over to something really cool that happened over the weekend. It was Miles Turner and his Venmo campaign. I thought it was hilarious. A fan, you know, asked for money and he gave him a penny for his thoughts. You know, what became a joke ended up becoming an awesome thing for the state of Texas, raising $76,187.58. So just an incredible thing by the NBA Players Association and by Miles Turner and by all the people that gave. What were your guys' thoughts? I'll start with you this time, Rhett. On all of this that transpired with Turner creating this Venmo campaign?
I mean, I don't think there's anything other than it being incredible. Like, I mean, Texas is Miles' home state. That's where he went to college and all of that. And so for him to, first off, take somebody requesting $100 from him for losing the Bulls game and turning it into a joke and blasting that dude all over social media in, like, I don't think it was a bad way. It was just a funny way. And I really enjoyed that, but then also to spin that into raising money for people who really, really need it and going through some stuff in his home state is just awesome.
Yeah. Mark.
Yeah. So the first thing I want to say is that I thought it was great for Miles. I always love how he handles that kind of stuff. Shows the person he is. Really cool that he was able to turn it into this awesome thing, raising money for people who need it. I really love that. I also want to say I am sick of people who do the crap that I did not find it funny at all that this person Venmo'd Miles Turner, because he does not know Miles Turner. He's not friends with Miles Turner. He found Miles Turner on Venmo and Venmo'd him a $100 request for quote unquote losing the game against the Bulls. And I think that's pathetic, overstepping boundaries, and just blatantly wrong. And I appreciate that Miles was able to turn it into something funny, but like, I don't know. I really am sick of people doing stuff like that. It's a bad look. But so props to Miles.
You don't like adding people, Mark?
I don't. Oh yes. You're you noticed that too. Yeah. My mentions were very fun that day. I do not enjoy that at all, believe it or not. Who would have thought?
No, I think it's just childish. Yeah. And it's just like, who cares? Like, especially when it's grown men that do it, like, that's just a problem to me. It's like, these are basketball players. Like, if they lose a game, who cares? It's not even the player's fault. It's a team sport. So no one player ever loses a game, as much as people like to try to point out whose fault it is for losses all the time. I mean, it's a collective effort. But anyway, now we're going to I don't know what I'm trying to say. We're going to go into a new transition is what I'm trying to say. We're going to transition into another in our biggest part of the show today. We're going to talk Eastern Conference All-Star Reserves, and we can do Western if you guys want to as well, but I think it all boils down to is, do the Pacers get an All-Star? And I know this has been a very interesting topic amongst Twitter, amongst all of, you know, the NBA, because there's a lot of good players in the Eastern Conference this year that are really trying to get on this reserve roster. So I guess, Mark, we'll start with you. Just kind of break down how you picked your guys. And maybe just if you had any like people that you went head to head with trying to pick, like just kind of go through that and let us know what you have for your seven reserves.
Yeah. So I think I would start by saying that I had the East was actually a lot harder for me to pick out than the West.
Agreed.
I did this last week and it took, I mean, I put like a couple hours of thought into it. And I think the biggest thing that I want to say, there are more than seven deserving All-Stars in the East. And in the West, but it has to boil down to seven. I think winning doesn't matter as much to me just because I think it's overrated when looking at an individual. You know, in some contexts, I think it's fair, but ultimately I want the people who are having the best individual seasons in the All-Star game because that's what matters to me. So my seven, because the starters are absolutely, you know, Kyrie, KD, Bradley Beal, Giannis, Embiid. I had James Harden. He's been absolutely fantastic in Brooklyn. There's no way for him to not be on the roster.
Let me ask you this real quick. Yeah. Do you think the coaches, when making that decision, you know, knock him a little bit because of how he handled things in Houston?
I mean, yeah, but at the same time, he's been so good in Brooklyn that there's no way to leave him off the roster. It would be criminal.
Yeah.
So I get where you're coming from, though. I thought about that myself. But at the same time, I was like, yeah, it's enough to knock him from. I mean, if he was having this year without any of that stuff at the beginning, like if you just factored in Brooklyn, I think he probably starts over Beal.
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, because he's been so good. But yeah, so it's James Harden for me. I have both the Celtics, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have had fantastic individual seasons. Two of the best in the East. Probably the two best wings not named KD in the East. I also had Zach LaVine because Zach LaVine has just been on one this year, like absolutely tremendous. Like his, if you're doing like a statistical comparison, what he's doing this year most compares to like a Steph Curry MVP year, not another Zach LaVine year. Like he's just been absolutely ridiculous in his shot making. Like Basketball Index, for people who aren't aware, it's like I'm a nerd. It's another step up from Basketball Reference and I pay for it. So that's probably why, if you don't know about it, that's why. They do fantastic work. If you're like super into stuff like I am, go get it. But the way to look at it is Zach LaVine is in like the 90th to 100th percentile in terms of every 3-point shot taking data point that you can come up with. But then he's in the second percentile for openness rating. So in other words, he's one of the best 3-point shot makers while also having the most contested looks. And that boils down to pretty much everything he's taking. He's getting to the free throw line at a career high rate. His defense has gotten better. He's made leaps as a passer. He's averaging almost 30 points per game on like 65% true shooting. to say Zach LaVine isn't an all-star is just kind of heresy at this point. He's been really, really good. I also had Chris Middleton. He's averaging 50, 40, 90 on really damn good splits. With really good numbers. He plays above average defense. To not have him on would be dumb. I think he's just been so good this year, and the efficiency matters. And you also look at what he's able to do in the games when he and Giannis, I think Giannis only missed like one or two games this year, but when Giannis is off court, he's good. Chris Middleton is just a fantastic player. So I have him on. I know some people are a little bit more split on Middleton because you could say only averages 20 points per game, but I think he does a lot as a passer too. And he's grown as a passer this year. And then my last player in the seven is Julius Randle. Julius Randle went from being like Zach LaVine, a guy who I just thought was kind of an empty calories player. And now Julius Randle is efficient. He's shooting incredibly well from three. He's made a huge stride there. He's getting to the line a bunch. He plays pretty solid defense. He's on the second or third best defensive team in the league. And he's a really, really darn good player. So I can't fault that. And then my last player is Nikola Vucevic.
Ah, okay.
And this is where I have gotten pushback from people on Twitter. I think Nikola Vucevic has had a better individual season than Domas has. Domas is my first guy out. I know that's probably rough to hear. I'm sorry to everyone listening. I just think personally Nikola Vucevic has had a better individual year. And you can bring up on-offs have been brought up. That's because Orlando sucks. Their team is decimated by injuries. They would be right around 500, probably a little bit better, similar spot to the Pacers if their roster was fully healthy. I mean, they're starting Gary Clark and Dwayne Bacon, guys who were barely eighth and ninth men last year. So yeah. I don't think you can fault Vucevic for being on a bad team or a team that's riddled with injuries and say that it's his fault that they're playing so poorly. I mean, he's been just he's having a career year, and I can't overlook that. Domas has been incredible. He's also having a career year, but he's really tailed off over the last 2-3 weeks. And that has an impact for me.
Yeah.
Especially because, I mean, a lot of all-star voting is who's doing well at the time of voting, you know, who's really, so I hit on this on my own pod today. That's coming out shortly, but like when you look at Domas, he's totally deserving of an all-star spot. I don't like when people bring up defense because they talk about defense in the wrong way with Domas. I'm sorry, I'm going on a big rant here, but this is important. We talk about Domas's defense and we're like, oh, well, he's just not a good defender, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, I don't think that's fair. He's in a really poor defensive context, being asked to be out on the perimeter so much, not being able to rotate as a low man or just do things close to the basket. And to his credit, he's like for what he's asked to do, he does a pretty solid job. And I don't think you can fault him for being put in a context that really isn't the best for him, especially when you're looking at the defense. And the on-offs are just weird because the team is not as good as they were last year. When he's off the court, oftentimes the bench is playing against a worse lineup, so they're going to play better. You can't look at this Pacers team and say that Sabonis isn't the best player. You know, he has been this year. Yeah. It's either him or Brogdon. It's a pretty close toss-up. But I just think overall, that's how I would lean. And it's not a slight to Domas. I hope people don't take it that way. That's fair. I just don't think he's had as good of a year as Nikola Vucevic has. And I know that's where it normally comes down to for people.
Yeah. So Rhett, I'll let you go ahead and reveal your reserves.
This is a very not exciting podcast because I had the exact same lineup.
Did you guys talk about this off air?
We did not talk about this off
air. Did not talk about it at all. So a lot of the same points Mark brought up, but I think that you can't not have Jalen Harden and Jason Tatum in there. Like those three will for sure make it.
Yeah, those are my three locks. I think Middleton should be a lock. He is in mine as well.
Yep, Middleton is also a lock. So what makes Middleton a lock for me is that he's their go-to crunch time player. He is their half-court offense because we know what Giannis is offensively in the half-court, and that's just not where he thrives. But it is where Middleton thrives. Like, if you watch him when he is on, he is he's probably, I mean, everybody's the most underrated player in the league when you talk about him, because that's just how the league works. But Middleton is legit, and there's no way he gets left off of my team.
Well, and let me ask you guys both this real quick before I, you know, finish talking about the rest of my guys. When you went into your predictions, was this more of what you guys thought would happen or what you guys would do if you were picking? Because I think that coaches probably value winning, even though we try to play it off like it's not that important. I still think coaches really do. Like, you look at a team like Philadelphia, and you guys only had one all-star on their team, and it's like most of the time when it's a team like that, you don't usually see just one person make the all-star team, especially when a guy like Ben Simmons, who's very popular, has already made the all-star game before, is on that roster. And I feel like sometimes coaches try to reward winning. And that to me has been evident over the past couple of years, like Bradley Beal not making it last year, even though he was having a ridiculous year. So that's why I'm curious, did you guys do it on your predictions or how you thought the coaches would vote?
Oh, it was strictly on my predictions. Okay. I personally don't care what the coaches think.
So. Okay. Well, that kind of goes into how I thought for me, because it is a little personal, but I also think like the coaches do reward winning. And so, you know, neither of you guys had Bam on your list. And
he was my first out over Domas, which is going to be a pain.
Yeah, he would probably be my first out over Domas as well.
Mark, when you're talking about defense, talking about how Domas isn't a good defender, when I'm normally talking about that, it's normally because somebody's comparing him to Bam.
Oh,
Bam,
no, yeah, I didn't mean that towards you. Defender. I meant
that's not even close. No, yeah. No, I know. I'm just saying that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I just mean, like, in general, when people – because I get really frustrated, like, you can't bring up Miles or Domas without somebody thinking that you're talking crap about the other. But I just think, it's so important to look at things contextually. But, like, you're talking about with Bam, like, I just think, he's rough because he's made improvements this year and he's been really good. But he's also – his context has been different too, because – he's playing a lot more out on the perimeter, which hasn't been great for, I mean, it's been fine for him individually. He's been good, but it's not been as good for Miami. But they've just asked him to do that more, because they really lack a four this year. So he hasn't been playing as much five. I don't know. I just think it's, the defense is really good, but the offense isn't quite good enough to, you know, get him over somebody like Vucevic. And I think also too, like, defense just doesn't matter as much for the All-Star game. Or like the offense is what gets you there. Defense is what helps you with deliberating this stuff, right?
Yeah. No, and I think it does. And so for me, this is how I kind of looked at it, and this is how I do things. I was looking at, like, you know, like player comparisons. Like, I did like battles basically. So for me, it was like LaVine versus Trae Young. And Trae Young to me is just not my favorite player. So I like Zach LaVine and I love what he's been doing this year. I looked at Middleton versus Ben Simmons for mine, and that's when I went with Middleton. I looked at Bam and Randall, and it's really hard to keep Randall off because of how unbelievable he's been this year and what he's been for the Knicks. So I think that there is probably more incentive to maybe actually pick Randall over Bam, especially with that New York market maybe. And just the way Tibbs has changed things too, and the way they're actually somewhat competent this year compared to previous years when they were a joke. And then I actually did do a little bit of a comparison between Sabonis and Vucevic. And basically, I was kind of looking in the coach's perspective, and this is probably the only way to me that I see any Pacer getting in is if they reward winning. And even though the Pacers are just a game above 500 right now, like, they're not playing great basketball, especially since they traded Oladipo. I just think that from previous results, they have rewarded winning. And it's whether you like it or not, I just think that's kind of how it's always been for the coaches. And to me, it's kind of fair in a sense, because I think players that are on winning teams should be give a little bit of a reward. But then you look at a team like Toronto, and I mean, they don't have anybody that we're even talking about around the bubble. I think Van Vliet's possible. Same with Gordon Hayward for Charlotte. They've been better this year. But yeah, it's just one of those things that's really hard to sit there and figure it out in the Eastern Conference because there's so many good players.
Yeah.
So for me on Philly getting that second All-Star, I think until like maybe a week or two ago, Tobias Harris has been better than Ben Simmons.
Yeah. No,
I agree. So it's kind of like you're splitting the vote between Tobias and Simmons, and that may be why they don't get a second one. Same for Toronto when it comes to Fred VanVleet, Siakam, or Lowry. I know Lowry's missed a ton of time, and Siakam was bad early season, so it's probably, I shouldn't say probably, it's definitely Fred. But it's because of splitting the votes like that that it makes it tough for teams like Philly and Toronto to get in there with an all-star, even if they do have a good record.
Yeah, and it's tough too because, like you're mentioning with Philly, like, I mean, Simmons has been, like, the last week and a half he's been on a tear. But he started out the year pretty poorly, at least offensively. He was really good defensively, of course, because that's what he does. But offensively, he started off really slow, looked not aggressive at all. He's picked it up lately. But Tobias Harris was awesome out the gates. Both guys have kind of just trended in opposite directions now. And like you mentioned, Rhett, I mean, I think if they're on separate teams, you look at it differently. But they kind of take away from each other a little bit. And with Toronto, too, they were just so bad to start the year. And again, it's not that winning doesn't necessarily matter as much to us. But I mean, individually, like Fred VanVleet's been pretty good this year. I just don't think quite all-star level.
Can't put him in over Levine or Trey.
Yeah, exactly. Like he's been really good. I don't think he's been better than Trey Young, but I also don't think Trey Young has been as good as he was last year. And he's been a part of the problem in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And then I think, I mean, Pascal Siakam, if you look over like the last month, yeah, but then he was really not good for the first two or three weeks of the year. And Kyle Lowry's just missed too much time. He's played 25 games, but he's been out of the lineup a bunch. And yeah, like Jimmy, I'm sorry, you can't put Jimmy in. He's missed way too much time.
No matter how much Hollinger wants it, right?
Yes, yes, I totally agree. Also, I can't wait for you guys to hear what Tom had to say about John Hollinger. but yes, yeah,
I can't wait either. No, I've been waiting for Denari to roast him like he did last year when they dunked him.
I feel like Chris that was pretty untamed for Chris. So
it was. It was not.
I don't know if he's going to do that again.
Yeah, and it might be different since Hollinger is a former executive, where Duncan is just a podcast guy. But let's go to the West real quick. Don't want to get into too much of a debate here, but just curious. I'll start with you, Rhett. Who were your seven reserves for the West?
So I think you've got to have a Jazz player, and it's kind of the same thing with the Philly getting the second All-Star between Gobert, Mitchell, and Conley. But I think Gobert's been their best player by far, and he should get in. Next, I think Chris Paul. He's just been better than Devin Booker this year. I just don't know. I think Chris Paul has impacted that team to a degree that it's tough to – if you're going to put a Phoenix Sun in there, it's tough to leave him out unless you just go for the scoring factor and the wow factor of having a guy like Devin Booker in the All-Star game. And then Paul George has to be in. He's having a great, great season. Can't really do anything about that. And then AD will get in but won't play. So probably going to put a Zion in there for him. And then I don't really know. I really struggle with the last spot or two. So I'll stop talking about it and let Mark give some numbers. Hopefully make my decision for me.
Yeah, so this one, the West is way easier for me than the East just because there are less guys to pick through. I think what I do is I start deducing, okay, well, what is this guy's argument for being in and why wouldn't I put him in? So I think I look at Brandon Ingram has been really good this year. He's doing a lot of what he did last year. I think he's averaging 24, 25 points per game right now on above league average true shooting, so very good. His shot making is really good. But I think you also look, too, over the last 2 weeks, the Pels have handed the keys over to Zion. He's doing a lot more with the ball in his hands. He's running pick and roll. He's handling stuff from the post, similar to how Domas does, and in slightly different ways, obviously. But the team has been better with him doing that. So I think Zion is an all-star for me because he's been so good this year, and Brandon Ingram's out. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has been really, really good this year. I think in going back through and, I've watched a little bit of Oklahoma City this year, not as much as I'd like to, but they've just been not a team I'm as focused on. But SGA's made a lot of improvements. He's been really good, but he's out right now with injury. And also he's not at the same level of Chris Paul. Chris Paul's an easy in for me. Like Rhett mentioned with Devin Booker, Chris Paul is still the best player on that team, even though, I mean, he's not averaging the same points. He's just, he impacts that team a little bit more than Devin Booker does. And I think Chris Paul has to be there, especially too. Like his last 2 weeks have been absurd. I think.
Oh man, he's been awesome.
Yeah, Phoenix is like 11-2 in their last 13, and he's shooting like over 50% from the field, over 50% from three. Like I don't think he's missed a free throw in like a week and a half. He's been incredible, and he's still an impact defender. It's hard for me to not put him in, or not that it's hard for me to not put him in. I wouldn't not put him in. Double contractions for the win. I think Rudy Gobert has to be in. Rudy Gobert is the best player on the best team in the West. And more importantly, Rudy Gobert is a top probably 10 player in the league right now, top 15. Mm-hmm. He's probably going to win Defensive Player of the Year, and I would have him in my top 6 or 7 on my MVP ballot. Wow. So, yeah, Rudy Gobert is an all-star. Paul George is an all-star. He's been insanely good this year. He's been just as good as Kawhi, but a little bit down. Like, I mean, he's because he doesn't shoulder the load as much as Kawhi. He's fantastic. There's no way for me to not put him in. And then obviously Luka Doncic is in. Oh, wait, no. Luka got the
starter.
Luka started. I had Dame starting. So Dame is my first guy off.
Yeah.
Because they're stupid and put Luka in instead, even though Dame should be in. But my last all-star spot goes to DeMar DeRozan.
Interesting. Okay.
DeMar DeRozan has been fantastic this year. His counting stats aren't anything crazy. You know, it's like 25 and 6, 6 or 7. But I mean, he's been incredible this year. His defense isn't anything to write home about, but he's taking the game-winning shots for a team that is 6th in the West, and he's been better, I think, than Devin Booker this year. So for me, he's my last guy in. And I also had Donovan Mitchell. I forgot to say Donovan Mitchell because I think he's been really good as well, and I'm fine having two Jazz players. But yeah, DeMar DeRozan, I guess, is probably my most controversial take. I haven't seen as many people say him, but I think he's been really good this year.
Yeah, and before I let you pick your last two, Brett, I'll just go and say mine real quick because I haven't really watched a lot of Spurs this year, so that's just my fault. But I have Dame, CP3, Mitchell, Gobert, Paul George, Anthony Davis, and then I went ahead and put Devin Booker in there as well. But I did put a little asterisk next to Anthony Davis because of the injury replacement.
Oh, yeah, and I didn't include AD because I just figured injury replacement.
Right.
And obviously. Right.
So I had Zion or maybe Mike Conley. And, you know, Conley is a guy that I just feel like had been playing. He's been playing so well for the Jazz, and it's you don't usually see three players like that make it. You know, you're not talking like three all-star, like superstar level players like Brooklyn has. So Mike Conley is a stretch, especially at this point in his career because he's a little bit older. But I just feel like, you know, he's been really, really deserving of it before, and what he's been doing for Utah has been fantastic. So that's why I have him in there as an injury replacement possibility. But I think I would give Zion the edge over Mike Conley.
Yeah, I really want Mike Conley to get in just because I think to the Jazz, Conley has been better than Mitchell to a certain point. I know Conley's hurt now, and that's definitely going to hurt his case. And he shares the floor a lot with Gobert almost exclusively, so there's a lot of noise to those numbers. But I forgot to put Dame in. I didn't get to put Dame in. I forgot to mention Dame. Like I said, multitasking for the win. But you mentioned DeMar, Mark, and I think that is something that I wanted to talk about with the East. Expectations should matter because the Spurs were not supposed to be good. The Knicks were not supposed to be good. And Julius Randle and DeMar DeRozan are the best players on those teams that are exceeding expectations to a pretty surprising degree. Like, the Knicks are 7th right now, and they're 2 games behind the Pacers.
Yep.
Like,
and the season series is tied. Don't forget. So.
Exactly. So, like, I don't really want to talk about a head-to-head matchup like that. I don't think that should matter when it comes to the All-Star voting. But expectations should matter. If a team was expected to be bad and there's a player who's the main reason why they aren't and they're just exceeding those expectations, I think they should be rewarded with an All-Star appearance.
Yeah, so are you saying that DeMar is in your All-Star team now?
Yeah, I think so. I had 2 spots left, so Dame and DeMar make those 2, I believe. If not, then I'll just deal with the Twitter flack later.
is there any, like, what about like De'Aaron Fox, somebody like that? Are there any guys like that? Like, I know you mentioned SGA, Mark. Like any younger guys that, you know,
Fox is probably my first guy out. He's been really, really good this year, but Sacramento slid over the last week and a half. Not, I mean, his individual play has still been good, but his pull up three is taken a little bit of a hit, which was part of the reason I had him in it, because that was such a big reason for why he was playing so well. But I still think he's been like very deserving of an all-star selection.
Yeah, and San Antonio, they really probably do deserve somebody at least to represent, because they've been playing so well and above expectations for sure. Like you said, Rhett, and I know it's really funny to look at the home and away record stuff, but like San Antonio is 9-3 on the road. Like, that's just wild. And they're kind of a team that nobody really expected anything from this year. Maybe it seemed that everybody kind of expected to fall off a little bit. I don't know. They're just a hard team to try to wrap your mind around, because they got some good young players, but they don't really have a championship level team, obviously, but they've got a competitive team. Just talking about the Spurs in general, Mark, do you think the Spurs are a team that ends up making the playoffs at the end of this season?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they're just overperforming. Like, they've had guys who have missed time. Like, LaMarcus Aldridge has not been good this year, which has been sad to see, because I love LaMarcus Aldridge and watch him play. He's been a huge negative for them. And missing time was actually kind of good for them, because they got to see what their lineup looks like with Jakob Poeltl in. They're a legit good team. Like, I think, like, if this team had played – if these teams had played tonight like they were supposed to, the Spurs and the Pacers, I think the Spurs probably would have won. I would have put my money on them. In the current construction, I should say, not with TJ and Karis, obviously, but in the current iteration of the Pacers, this Spurs team is better. And they're really athletic. They're just a fun team. I think they're very hard to compete with. And they're not just – they've done it for enough of the season that I don't think it's just a fluke. You know, they've had guys right. who have statistically regressed, and they've still been good. So I'm interested to see what they come back looking like after – they had three games get called off, so they're not playing again until later on this week. But they're a good team.
Yeah.
No, I don't think they're a title contender or anything, but I think they'll make the playoffs.
And that's good, because – when the Spurs are fun, I think when the Spurs are good, they're more fun to watch, obviously. But just the way they play basketball, it's a different style than you're seeing a lot nowadays. And some of the young guys they have on their team, for me, are just really exciting. I mean, Keldon Johnson is someone I really like.
Can I ask you something?
Are
Rhett and I finally get our apology from Pacers Twitter for wanting DeJounte Murray to be a Pacer? DeJounte Murray has been their second best player. I mean, there's an argument for him as their first best player. He's made a lot of improvements this year. He is good. And I really would like – I'm going to send this – I have to remind me. I'm going to message Tony as soon as I get off here too, because he clowned me as well. We were right, Rhett. And it's not about being right. It's just more important. DeJounte Murray is a really good basketball player.
What was your trade idea again, Rhett, for DeJounte?
We don't have to talk about that. But, you know.
Yeah. It was Aaron Holiday in a second. Let's just go with that.
Well, I mean, Aaron Holiday has been inconsistent this year. But I do think that the Pacers maybe having another playmaker in the backcourt would be really beneficial for Brogdon, because that is something that I just feel like he's really been struggling. I know that he had a great game against Minnesota, and so did Domas, but it was just one of those things with Brogdon. You're just starting to see, once Vic left, just having that secondary playmaker with him has really hurt him. But yeah, so this wraps it up for another episode of Setting the Pace. You can find Mark on Twitter at @mschindlernba and Rhett at @Rhett_Bauer. I'm at @AlexGoldenNBA, and we will talk to y'all next week.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.